open meeting.
Alcoholics Anonymous, Indian Village Group. As you know, this is a special night, it's our 36th anniversary, and a warm welcome to anyone here that might be here for the first time, and the same to all of our old friends. At this point, I'd like to ask Dr. Zahn to open our meeting with a prayer.
Let us pray. Almighty God, our Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for all the blessings which Thou hast so abundantly bestowed upon us, for our great land and the lands from which we come, in which it is our privilege to live, for the founding fathers and mothers who sacrificed that the blessings of freedom could be established. Grant that we may learn from their example of personal self-discipline, of shared community concern, of compassion, and mutual responsibility, and above all, that we may follow their example of dependence upon Thee, for Thou alone art our refuge and our strength. And on this anniversary occasion especially, we pray, dear Father, that Thou bless us in order that we may become a blessing to others through Jesus Christ our Lord, in whose name we pray it. Amen.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others, alcoholics, to achieve sobriety. At this point, I'd like to turn the meeting over to a good friend of mine, an active member of the Indian Village Group, George R.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, George.
It's heartwarming to see a gathering of beautiful people like this. And I say beautiful because I'm talking about what you stand for and the principles that you live by. Now, we especially in AA know the value of a sense of humor. We especially have learned in AA to be able to laugh at ourselves. And since I'd like to make humor a part of the theme, I'd like to start you off on a story of mine. Maybe it'll make you laugh. Incidentally, it's quite current. It's a bicentennial story. This teacher was asked her class to mention one of the great Americans and give the saying that he is known for. And nobody in the class raised their hand. Until finally, a little Mexican boy raised his hand, and she said, "Jose, stand up." And Jose said, "Admiral Farragut, 1884. Damn the torpedoes. Full speed ahead." Well, the teacher was astounded. He says, "A little boy from Mexico, and he knows that kind of history of America, and all of you other children were born here that don't know it?" He says, "You ought to be ashamed of yourselves." Little kid in the back hollered, "Damn the Mexicans." She said, "Who said that?" He said, "Sam Houston, 1864. Years gone by. One special fellow that was a spark plug in this group. His name is John Van Moore. He's here tonight. And back in 54, when this group gave an old-timers party, we had them coming from all over the city. John was an advertising man, and his printers were so glad to have him back on the job and giving them business that they were willing to do almost anything for him. So he had some very elaborate invitations made up, and they were sent to all those people in this area and throughout the United States who had gotten their AA here that had 10 years or more of sobriety. Gosh, the responses that we got from that, telegrams and letters. And then also, he didn't stop there. He had beautiful programs printed up. The printers were really generous, according to John. And that meeting took place in the St. Charles Community Center. It's up on Townsend and St. Paul. We used the auditorium and we filled that place. There must have been close to 600 people there. So John, hello. He's from out of state now. Stand up and...
humiliate me? I have to also give my wife Muriel credit for sitting down in the dining room, the dinette there, addressing all of these envelopes from a great big list. Every one of them was handwritten, and I couldn't have done it by myself. She was a helping hand on it.
Then we have another old friend here. She's a darling. Some people in AA perhaps have one pigeon, or maybe at the most two pigeons. But this girl had a flock. Her name is Norma Stevens. And she had a coffee shop on Larned near Cass, and it became a meeting place for us. She served the businessmen in that area, so in the evening the place was closed. But we had a pretty lively crowd around there. We all depended upon Norma. On Sunday mornings we'd get together there, she'd throw a towel over the cash register, and she'd say, what will it be, ham and eggs, bacon and eggs, waffles, or flapjacks? And the party was on her. That was a great start for many of us in AA. The popular song in those days was zippity-doo-dah, zippity-a, my oh my, what a beautiful day. And that became our theme song, and that's the way we felt. We have another fellow that's an old-time regular, an early member of AA here, Tommy Rummage. Awfully good to see him tonight. When he came into our group and got sober, the city lost a volunteer traffic cop. Because he used to like to get out on Jefferson Avenue and direct the traffic. I see Art Stern back there. He's an old, early regular of the Indian Village group. Art and I made some 12-step calls together. He's just a half an inch taller than me. And Art, stand up and say hello. Now, the Indian Village group was founded 36 years ago. Our first meeting was in the Church of the Messiah because Ann Nolson and Mickey Grills belonged to that church. And incidentally, that was the first church meeting in the city of Detroit. Ann Nolson came from a family of affluence, society, I guess the jargon of today we used, you would say she belonged to the jet set. But she wound up with our set. Sarah was telling me last week that Ann Nelson, to start with, was quite proud. And she came to our first meeting looking down the length of her nose. Until one day, one of the boys from the avenue said, "Listen, you're another drunk just like us." And from there on, she completely changed. She became very humble. She became a terrific member of AA. Back in 64, when we had that big meeting, she was one of the honored guests. She has since died. Now, Mickey Grills came from a prominent name family here in Detroit. And he and Ann, of course, as I said, brought the Indian Village group out to Church of the Messiah on East Grand Boulevard. That was their church. Now, Mickey died a tragic death. He was able to do lots of things and give all kinds of help to other people. But he was incapable of helping himself. We have all seen that too. Now we have a panel here tonight that consists of some of the early AA members here and in Canada. Now, there's no seniority in AA, but there are pioneers. Those people that came before, and these people up here tonight came before and before and before. Way back in the early days of AA, when it was just starting to get its roots in Detroit. They learned very early that we are not necessarily our brother's keepers, but they did learn that we are brothers. And it's on that precept that they got into the program. And I think that's what makes AA work, is our sincere brotherly interest for each other. Now on the panel tonight, we've got some oldsters, and I'm going to start with the youngster in the crowd. He's only got 29 years. He and I used to trip over each other making 12-step calls at the hospitals. And even though he's from downriver, and I'm from the east side of Detroit, AA was very small and warm in those days, and everybody knew everybody, it seemed. And Bill became a very good friend of mine. But he was 1 month ahead of me. And you know that bugged me? Because a month of sobriety in those days was very important. I even toyed with the idea of sending him a bottle of his favorite whiskey for a present. I didn't want to do any harm to him, but I thought maybe I could sidetrack him for a couple of months. But it's always been the same. He's still a month ahead of me. So I give you Bill joy. Bill.
Such an inventory. didn't expect to be the keynote speaker of this panel. For those that follow me, I've joined to let them talk. I feel a little bit out of place. When I came to AA and well up in the world, because I'm a Kentucky colonel, not by an appointment by the governor of the state of Kentucky, but by absorption of Kentucky bourbon. I used to drink Old Forester until I couldn't see the forest on account of the Old Forest. But AA was established. And it was established on a firm and sound foundation by a bunch of, should I say, old drunks, Mike? The average age would be somewhere between 45 and 55, and that bunch of lushes had no place to go except up. Came in two categories, the high bottom drunk and the low bottom drunk. And Bill Wilson made a definition for those two expressions. We all come in from the gutter. The low bottom drunk is laying in the gutter, and the high bottom drunk's got his head on the curb. But AA just didn't happen. It just didn't happen. It took the times, dedicated, serious effort. People who came to AA to put together the program on the firm foundation that you see it today. They were dedicated to following the instructions, the charge that our co-founders gave to us, Bill and Dr. Bob. They charged us, each one, to expend their best efforts, and it goes for us today, to expend their best efforts so that AA would be perpetuated, so that the future generations would have the same opportunity to find the relief from compulsive alcoholic drinking that we have found. And would you believe it? Future generations, we have a 14-year-old boy in our group, down at the Glenwood Group in Wyandotte, and I think that he just almost had a little over a year's sobriety. And they talk. Summer, and Mike was there. Mike meant it. Mike put his arm around him, and he said, well, he said, this is something. Two drunks meeting, and AA's, we're both sober. The oldest member of AA in the Detroit metropolitan area, and the youngest. Isn't that beautiful? Thought to me right now. I'm only going to talk for 55 minutes. The thought comes to me right now when they talk about forming young people's groups. Do you know that youngster and I can sit down and I'm not going to tell you how many years older I am than he is. It'll only be about 65. But we can communicate. Bear this in mind. We can communicate. The youngster admits that he's an alcoholic. I know I am. And two alcoholics can communicate to each other irregardless of their age. But times have changed since I came in. I'm just going to take you just a couple of minutes. I joined the Old Northwest group. Did I join it? I was carried over there. The closest group was out of 4th and Stevenson Highway, Royal Oak group. And we used to boil back and forth. We used to come over to the Indian Village and up to Grosse Pointe Memorial. They wanted to form a group in between Plymouth and Eileen and 4th and Stevenson Highway. Sleeper jumps apart, you know. And they had a meeting in my house. I found that AA would work and work quick. If you could get yourself out of the way a little bit so God could get in at work. I came to AA on the 7th of September. My first wife died on the 7th of October. It wasn't necessary for me to drink. And we had this meeting in my house on the 7th of November. I only had 11 sponsors. They looked around for 11 more. They said I needed them. And we decided to see if we could find a location for a group in between. And do you know that it took us until the following March before we could find a place to meet? And now almost all you have to do today is put a sign out on the corner. We'd like to start an AA group in this area, and the only thing you have to do is call in the police forces. Keep the people lined up, make applications to accept you. It's just been beautiful. We've had constant growth in AA. We used to hold meetings up in the Castec Auditorium. And I remember that it kind of crowded. The PA system was lousy. I better tell you this before Frank gets an opportunity to tell you that I happen to be delegate to the General Service Conference in 1955 and 1956. He preceded me. He claims it was a step down. I claim it was a step up. And 1955, AA became of age. And incidentally, in 1955, they had the conference in St. Louis. And we don't hear this mentioned, but on the 1st of July, Saturday Evening Post, they had a feature item of Bob Allen. In 1956, we had the pleasure of having Lois come to Detroit, and in reality, I think that's when Al-Anon really got started in this area. But we decided that if we become of age, we better look around and see if we couldn't get a top cracker. I happen to know the manager of the city county building. I went down to see him and he sent me to the fellow over in the Veterans Memorial. He sent me over to the Ford Auditorium. And for 4 years, was it, George? Four or five years. We had spring and fall meetings in the Ford Auditorium, and the only charge they made to us was to pay the stagehands, $92. And we used to put a couple thousand people in there, didn't we, John? Twice a year, yeah. Came from all over. And they became of age, and it was accepted. It was accepted. Let's see, I had another hour to go. But the only thing that I would like to add right now is just carry in your heart the message that Bill Wilson gave to Mike and to rest of us back in those days that were associated a little bit with them. Expend your best efforts so that the future generations will have the same opportunity to find this way of life that we have found, or shall we add to that, so that AA will be perpetuated for so long as God shall need it. And I like an expression that if I find it twice in that new book that's out that Bill used to use. It's an Arabian salutation. So I would like to close by saying, I salute you and I thank God for your lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And as he said, I might let the other members of the panel talk. But I do have a few things to say, and I'm going to try to get it in installments so it won't seem so long. But it would be very much amiss if we didn't recognize Ruth, Bill Joy's wife, who we met in AA not too many years after he came in. Ruth, would you stand up? Now, I've got to add to that that my wife is here tonight, and she has 28 years of sobriety this past August. And of all the beautiful things that have happened to me in AA, many, 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 I could write a volume on them. But I believe the greatest was meeting Helen in this group 28 years ago, and the two beautiful daughters that she had given me that are grown ladies now, and I mean ladies. And for that, I am forever grateful. Now, I'm going to take a little time out and introduce the next speaker, and we're getting up a little in years now because this man has 30 years in AA. Frank is a good old friend, a stalwart in AA here in Detroit, very active, but he has since moved to Lansing. And he came all the way from Lansing tonight to be with us. I recall especially our first date conference in 1954 that was held in Detroit at the Sheraton Cadillac Hotel. And Frank was our program chairman. Frank gave me the privilege moderating the medical group. On that group, we had Dr. Walter Green, who later became medical director of Brighton Hospital. Dean Meehaus, one of the greatest, most, in my opinion, the greatest authority on alcoholism, because he had been there, and he was a student of psychiatry, and he was a man of medicine. And the good that man did with his Bloomfield Hospital, I took fellows out there that couldn't stay sober, and it seemed as though Dean Meehaus had a magic wand. He was on that panel. There was another member of AA on that panel, Dr. Woods. And there were also two ordinary doctors on there. They didn't belong to the program. I don't even remember their names. So, I'm going to take a breathing spell and give you Frank Malloy.
Thank you very much, George. We just talking with Joe, with Josie over there a little while ago, and we were reminiscing a little bit about the old days in AA. And on the way down here, I began to think for myself, you know, and I looked over the whole spectrum back in 1945. We used to meet up in the McAfee building on a Saturday night, and we'd hope and pray that maybe we'd get as many as 100 people. And if we did, we were overjoyed. They tell me now that there's over 750,000 people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, you can very well see that it won't be long before we'll have a membership numbering 1,000,000. And the thought occurred to me that if I had to name a theme for this evening, when I think back of all other wonderful things that have happened, and this includes the early days of Indian Village when I came over here too, the only thing that comes to my mind is this, at the time, and the place and the audience just naturally suggests the theme of Thanksgiving. Not only Thanksgiving week, but it's a Thanksgiving that I don't think I could ever lose, because I had everything in the world to be thankful for. Just like Bill and all the rest of us, I came in here stumbling and fumbling and sick and bewildered and what have you. And I just had the good fortune to meet these people, and they took the time out to help me to sober up. And it was quite a job, I think, but I made it, and thank God I've been sober now since March of 1945. I can recall when I first came into the program, there was about, roughly speaking, there was 9 or 10 groups in the city. I remember Grosse Pointe Memorial Group, there was a Manistee group, there was this Indian Village group, there was a group on the northeast side, a north group, a northwest group, a southwest group. And I don't really remember, but I think Mike Sullivan had a group going out in Dearborn at the same time. But that was all, and there was one in the Ionic Temple on Grand River across from the Olympic Stadium. And that, as far as I can recall, that's all the groups that there were. And as you know, the effect of this Jack Alexander article didn't take effect immediately, but around the time that I came in, it apparently was beginning to make an impact on people, because I can recall many, many times when you go to a meeting, you didn't make one 12-step call, you brought 6 with you. We used to go out and get your carloads of them. And these were calls that came in to us. We didn't go out and seek them at all. They were calls that were coming in. I know Mike and Bill and George, you've been around here almost as long as I have, so you remember that. The calls got that bad that the secretary we had at the time, his name was Frank Newell. He called a meeting one night and he said, "Fellas, I cannot handle these telephone calls anymore." He said, "They're coming in morning, noon, and night." He said, "And I'll lose my job if I don't do something besides answer the telephone." So we got together and we decided we'd hire a girl to answer the phone, and we'd open up an office. And the first one was over in the Ford building on Griswold Street. And we weren't there very long, as I remember, until it moved up into the McCurchy building, where it's been ever since. And this was the main reason for opening that, was that we were getting so many telephone calls, we just couldn't handle them. And it was nothing to have 2 or 3 calls in one day. I've had drunks helping drunks, and neither one of them ever been to an AA program. I said, you go to a pick him up, and then I'll pick you up, and we'd have three or four, all help of one another, and we all got to AA, and I was the only member. We were very happy about all this. Of course, they didn't all stay sober, but we didn't have any problem getting customers. Not whatever that I can recall. And I do know earlier on that they had to advertise in the paper. They'd go see doctors, clergymen, and others, and ask, you know, trying to find alcoholic patients. But by the time I got here, I guess I'm just Johnny completely compared with Mike and a lot of these fellas, because this thing was going real strong when I arrived on the scene. And anyway, I have to be very grateful because it changed my whole way of thinking, my whole way of living, everything that I've done, everything that I've thought since, but just exactly the opposite of the way I thought years ago. I oftentimes remember old George. I'm not too good at telling jokes and so forth, but we had an old fellow in the Plymouth Island group years ago, old George G., and every time he'd open the meeting, he'd say, "Now, ladies and gentlemen, the reason that we're all here is because we're not all there." Well, we started to say, I can remember very well, too, in 1950 when Bill Wilson came to Detroit. He started to discuss with us what he called at that time a third legacy. The idea was that if anything should happen to Bill, we were not going to have any crown prince succession. He was not going to assign his leadership to somebody else. His whole thought was that if anything happens to me, I want to leave this program right in the hands of the people that can handle it best, and that's the alcoholics. Well, now, he wasn't sure that we were ready for it. And so he set up a trial program. He said, we'll have each group send a representative, and they in turn will elect their own committee men, and they will delegate. We'll have a meeting in New York, our delegates meeting. And we elected Mike. I remember Mike very well. I think it was in 1951, 52, I guess it was. And then when Mike left office, he called a meeting over in his house up in Grosse Pointe, and they elected me. I don't know what they were thinking about. I had come into this program, and I'll swear to God, I didn't know it was 2 and 2 made 4. And here they're electing me a chairman of this, and chairman of that, and chairman of something else, and I can't imagine. I haven't been doing anything different than anybody else. Maybe they like the way I wore my hair, or I wasn't wearing glasses at that time, that might have helped, I don't know. But for some reason or other, they elected me to delegate, and I had the privilege of going down there. And it was after that that we did start this Michigan State Conference. I was only one of many, because it followed Leroy Buckout and Dearborn, Bill Buckner, George Ruderman, Jack Caron, Vince Nee. I could name you 100 names, and I'm sorry to have to say that most of these people are passed away. I never was one to worry about using my name at a meeting of this kind anyway, because this is AA, and we don't have to be anonymous among each other. So it doesn't bother me in the least to do that. But if I should mention a name and anyone doesn't like it, I beg your pardon now. Mike and Archie were in the Grosse Pointe group, and they had old John Cole in the North group, and Bill Joy out in Wyandotte, Chuck Kendrick, and George here, and a few others in this Indian Village group, George Hood, and I recall Augie Hoffman. And so I just saw Bill and Lucille Postum back there, they're old buddies of mine, from the old Plymouth Marine group. And it's just a wonderful feeling to come back and see how this thing has changed. I'm sure that neither Mike or anybody else ever dreamed that this program would reach the point that it has today. It's just unbelievable. Starting with two fellows, if you can believe that, not only in New York, but two right here in Detroit. Archie and Mike, there's all the world, just two of them. And today, there's thousands and thousands. I don't think any other program that I've ever witnessed has ever grown like this or had the success that this is. And the thing that floors everybody is the fact that we don't have any president. Can you imagine that? No president, no vice president, politicians. I mean, this is unbelievable to have an organization like this where nobody runs anything. But I don't know anybody else that could stand this kind of an organization. You know darn well that any organization that ever was formed always has to have a steering committee and a few children doing this and that and everything else, and we never had any trouble with that PA because we didn't need them. Can't you just imagine me setting down rules and regulations and saying to a few drunks, now look, you got to do this. Every one of you don't walk out. I mean, this is the first thing we learned, I guess, about it. You don't tell them they have to do anything. And this is the only thing that I can recall. We go out and we try to help a fellow. We bring him in here. We explain the program to him, and then it's up to himself. It's between him and God whether he gets sober or whether he doesn't. I can't sober anybody up. I never sobered anybody up in my life. I prayed for a lot of them. I tried to help them. But if they don't have it in them, or don't want to stop drinking, I had a good formula for it. If you want to stop drinking, buddy, I'll go to hell for you. If you don't want to stop drinking, you can go to hell. I remember in the old days we had a gal, and I don't know whether George made any preparation to talk about her or not, but it was our dear old friend Sarah Klein. Sarah was a social worker who had contacted Archie right at the very outset and worked with him right on up until the day she became too ill to do anymore. But when we'd get down to that McAfee's building on a Saturday night, she'd have tables loaded with literature, and every group in town were buying them from her. She was ordering them from our New York headquarters, you know, and she made coffee and brought in donuts. She helped, I don't know, there's no way to describe how much work this woman did. And she is not an alcoholic. And I just thought, I'd say it an old time paper from the Detroit News in 1959. And this is a picture of Sarah. I'm going to leave it up here on the front table so that any of you that would like to see it can come up here and look at it. But please don't damage it because I cherish it that much, I want to say this. And I would also like to say while I'm doing this that the man responsible for putting this in the paper is Johnny Fisher. Where are you, John? He's back there somewhere. And here's another picture of that dear lady. We'll just set them all up here, so for any of you that have never seen these people, that may never have the opportunity to see, you just might enjoy looking at them. So we'll leave them up here where you can get them. Well, I'm not going to take very much more time, George. I see you're twiddling your fingers there as though you thought I was. I'm not another Bill of Joy. I'm just going to stay here. But I'll tell you the 12 steps as I see them. I have read them. I have talked about them. I've studied them. And I think I've gone over them about as many times as most people that I know. And they have become a sort of a rosary for sobriety. Something that I can think about, something I can pray about, and something that I can work on. And it just seems to me that there's some single factor that has caused all this to happen. Something that each of us must have in order to make this program grow and expand as it has. And I think our recovery is entirely due to our faith in God our Father, and in our willingness to abandon ourselves to His will. And I hope and pray that the good Lord and you
I'm my greetings and greetings from Windsor to the Indian Village Group on your 36th birthday. This is wonderful. My, there's good vibes tonight in this room. There's a lot of love here. You just feel so good being in this room with fellow AAs. And I think of being introduced to AA at the Northwest Group. There were three groups going in Detroit at that time. And tonight I would like to pay a special tribute to my sponsor, Chuck Pelton, for his perseverance and 6 long months of working on me. We worked together at Chrysler's, getting me to go to that first meeting. I remember coming over to Detroit, and there was Chuck and Al, myself, and going into that Northwest group, which was about, I think, about 12 miles from my house, maybe 15, and I got out of the car and I looked up and down the street, a little afraid somebody might see me walking in there. I remember I was greatly impressed when I stepped into that room with the look of purpose in those members' eyes and the smile on their faces. As I look back in retrospect, I think God handpicked these people, these early men and women. I looked around the room and I said to one fellow, "Where do you keep the drunks?" And he looked at me and smiled and he said, "Where are the alcoholics?" I thought perhaps they'd kept them in the other room and these were the do-gooders or something. I went to that first meeting with other fears and intrepidation, believe me. As I was riding out, I got a horrible thought that perhaps, and I hadn't known, fortunately Chuck didn't tell me much about this AA, that maybe they were going to ask me to come up in the front and say I was saved. For that reason, I sat in the very back row in the aisle seat so that I could get out. Well, of course, I didn't. The next thing that I was greatly impressed with, at the end of the meeting, when these members got up and stood on their 2 feet and bowed their heads and said the Lord's Prayer so slowly, so deliberately, I knew they meant every word of it. And I rode home with these other two men and went to my home and went down in the basement and opened a bottle of whiskey so I could get enough to drink to go to sleep. And it was another 6 weeks before I could accept this fact that I could be an alcoholic. And there were a set of circumstances that led to that, which I won't go into tonight. But I would like to take you back to that night of our first Windsor meeting. As I look back at those days, I couldn't see it then in the full light that I can tonight. When I think of this import, your export of AA into Canada, one of the greatest things I think that Canada has ever gotten from the United States. When I look at the groups over there and the flourishing groups and the man and woman comes into their first meeting and neither one of them have got a smile, and you look at them and you know that it won't be too long before she'll be smiling and he'll be smiling and there'll be a little foundation to build a home and a marriage and a life on. And it's wonderful to belong to this outfit. Everything that's done is so much for the good. And I feel very grateful at being a member. I'd like to just say a few names over before I get to that first Windsor meeting of these fellows that stand out in my mind. All of the fellows at the table tonight, Arch Trowbridge, Mike Eshelman, George Rudiman, Frank Malloy, Bill Joy, Dean Mehouse, Mike Sullivan, Lloyd Lee, Doc Green, George Hood, and many, many other names that I can't remember, and there's a couple of women belong to the group, and I think of Briest. Such tremendous people. And when we think back of Arch Trowbridge going down to Akron and living with Dr. Bob, seeing Bill and getting this program firsthand, bringing it back to Detroit, giving it to Mike, and then passing it on to others. And we came over and we got this from these people that had gotten straight from the horse's mouth, and we brought it back to Windsor. We didn't change it because we didn't know any better way to work it. And we passed it on to those other groups that have started since then. Chuck and Al were talking about starting this first Windsor meeting. And I was looking forward to being there. Not that I was an alcoholic. I wasn't able to accept this fact. I just got a nice promotion and a big raise, put in charge of the department. I could drink everybody under the table. How could I be an alcoholic? And John Barleycorn fixed me up the night before on a Thursday night. We were going to have our meeting, our first Windsor meeting, the next night. I remember leaving work at noon and buying a bottle of Barclay Scotch and drinking that. And at 4 o'clock, I went to my home and stood in my kitchen with a water glass full and drank it down so that I thinking that that might put me to sleep with what I'd had, and set the alarm for 8 o'clock so I could go to that first Windsor meeting. And I got up feeling pretty shaky, believe me. Not intoxicated, no. And I went into my kitchen, and I'd like to tell you about this, because I know it was my spiritual experience. My wife had apparently come in from work. She was a school teacher, and she'd left because I was alone in the house when I awakened. I get up, and I made a beeline for that refrigerator where I'd hidden this park bottle of scotch and poured about an inch in the bottom of the glass. The reason such a little bit is the glass wouldn't hold anymore. It was slopping around in there. And I'm sure that if any of you had been in the kitchen with me, you wouldn't have heard anything. But there was a voice. I don't think it came in my ears, but clearly and distinctly. It said, "Wolf, if you're ever going to quit drinking, now is the time to do it." And I remember mumbling to myself, saying, "Yes, now is the time." And I poured that back into the bottle without spilling a drop and put it back in the refrigerator. I haven't had a drink since. I don't say that boastfully. I say that with all the humility I've got, because if it had been left to my willpower, my decision, I wouldn't have been able to make it. I know. I went down to that meeting. There were three wonderful fellows from the Northwest group and their wives that came over to be our first speakers. It was held in the Walsh Advertising Room in Windsor, downtown Windsor. There were Chuck and Al and their wives, and a drunk that they'd picked up off the street, an intoxicated lawyer they dragged out of one of the local hotels, and myself. And I don't remember anything that any of those speakers said, except the last one. And his last few sentences were ringing in my ears as I drove home. And it went something like this. He finished off his talk. "If you're having trouble with alcohol, and you really want to do something about it, ask God for help. After all, hasn't he created the universe, the world, the bees, and the trees, even you and me? He can do it if you ask him." As I drove home alone in my car, I said, "Yes, of course, God is all-powerful. You can't study physics without realizing there's some great intelligence behind everything." And I believed in a God. But would he help me? Oh, I was sure he wouldn't. In 12 years of drinking, you do a lot of nasty, hymy little things that you're not very proud about. I didn't kill anybody, no. But I knew God wouldn't hear my prayers because I wasn't important enough. And then flashed in my mind's eye was a mental picture of men like you see at the table here tonight, the names that I've read. And I remembered some of their stories. One man had killed somebody with his car when he was drinking. Another man had lost his business, $1 million business, and his home and his wife. Another man had been 7 years in the penitentiary. Another one had been 3 years in an insane asylum. And then I remembered the look of purpose in these men's eyes, the smile on their face. And God had helped them. He must have heard their prayers, and some of their stories were worse than mine. So I went into my room in my back bedroom. I was sleeping alone at this time in the back room. And I got down on my knees, and I said the shortest prayer of my life. I said, "Please, God, help me quit drinking." Said it from my heart and not from my stomach. And that prayer was answered fully. I climbed into bed, fell sound asleep. And you know what? for the first time in months and months and months, the alarm wakened me up in the morning. I didn't wake up ahead of the alarm. And I get up, and I remember after going to meetings over here in Detroit, and we had two meetings a week in Windsor, about 7 or 8 days afterwards. And I get up in the morning, I didn't have the shakes. I remember I bent down for my shoes that were under the bed, and they used to go down like this, and I realized I didn't have to. I could bend right over and pull them out, and I didn't feel dizzy. I didn't feel as though I was going to fall over in my face. And I dropped the shoes, and I went to the back window and spread the drapes, and I looked out at a beautiful October sky with some fleecy white clouds flashing across. I knew up there someplace there was a kind, loving God that these fellows had told me about at Northwest Group, that he was keeping me sober, and my prayers had been answered. And I was so grateful for this. And I hurried into work so I could tell Chuck. And he was late that morning. And I kept watching for him. When he came in, I went over, rushed over, and I shook hands with him. And I said, Chuck, this program is wonderful. If it doesn't give me anything more than the way I feel in the morning, it's going to be worth it. He'd been in for 6 months longer than me. And he looked at me and smiled, and he said, oh, but it has. You'll find out. And I was to find out. I was to find out. I feel younger tonight, mentally and physically, than that guy that came in 32 years ago. I feel like an entirely different person. I'm glad that I'm an alcoholic and found AA. I feel that I'm a better person now, having found AA and been an alcoholic, than I would have been if I'd never touched a drink. And I remember this beautiful lady at that Northwest group, Sarah Klein, standing behind her literature table. And she was a beautiful lady. My son was born 6 months after I got into AA, after I got sober. I remember worrying about that. You know, I'd been drinking at time of conception. And I remember I went to George Hood, and I spoke to him about it, because he was an analytical chemist. I thought maybe he might have an answer, and he did. He said if it withstood the ravages of alcohol, I'm sure that the offspring will be fine. And he was. And I can remember going up to Sarah Klein and putting my hand in my pocket and showing her these pictures of my son. And you know, she was such a kindly person. If I didn't speak up soon enough about it, she'd say, how is that son of yours? And I'd go over behind the table and I'd tell her all about him and the things that he'd done. Today, that young man is 6'2", and he's 31 years old. I'm 6 months older than he is. And he just had a... They just had, 2.5 months ago, they had a little, beautiful baby girl. And I've got these pictures in my pocket if anybody wants to see them. Time marches on. 1945, January, I left my job at Chrysler's and moved to Leamington, Ontario, where H.J. Heinz was busy making 57 varieties. They wanted to build the world's largest tomato processing plant. And I was asked to go down there and give them a hand. And I left the job, worked down there for less money. I wondered at the time why I was doing it, and I said, well, it's just to gain the experience, but I know now I can see the picture in retrospect. And I was down there until April before I found a baby. You know, that's pretty long to go without a pigeon. And I was at a meeting in Windsor, and a man came into that meeting in April. I've never seen him at a meeting before. I've never seen him at a meeting since. And he walked up to one of our members and he said, there are two people down in Leamington that need your program. And he said, see that fellow over there in the gray suit? You go over and see him. He's living down there just now. So he came over and he gave me the two names. And I called on this man as soon as I got back. The other one was the chief of police. I called called on this man, and he was pretty despondent. This was a Monday morning, and you know what Monday mornings are like. And it was a good time to hit. And he came into AA. And in September of that same year, the Leamington group was formed. Three or four members there. There's a couple of people from Leamington tonight. Very good. Six, thank you. Six there. And Leamington got off to a beautiful start. And from that group of Leamington, every other little city, town, and village this side of London, Ontario, was started by that group. And it isn't much of a town in southwestern Ontario that doesn't have an AA group. And it's just beautiful to see these things. I went down to an anniversary in Chatham and saw about 500 people. I think it was their 27th or 28th, I forgot, 28th anniversary. These things are beautiful. I was looking over a little article that I had written on, so that we wouldn't forget something of the history of AA in this part of Ontario. And among other things, I have the names and the dates that the first 12 came into the Windsor group. Now, of the first three, none has resumed drinking. Of the first 10, five have not resumed drinking, and five had some trouble. And three of these died, and the other two are presently sober, which makes about a 75% success rate, which is beautiful. I'm very proud to be a member of AA. I'm very glad that God has seen fit to give me good health, that I can still come to meetings, I can still make 12-step calls, I can still watch people coming into AA and getting sobriety, a measure of peace of mind, a measure of tranquility, some health, getting their families back. Look at the smile on their faces. No, AA won't make things perfect for you, but it puts you in a position where you know how to handle it. I believe that God does answer prayers. I believe that God will give me those things that I need if I ask Him for them. I believe that I should go out and handle the things that I can handle and ask Him when I bump up against a blank wall and don't know which way to turn. Reminds me of that article that's written in the, it's syndicated in your papers over here about this minister was writes answers to people, and this boxer wrote in, and he said, I'm a boxer. I'm a good boxer. I don't win every fight. If I pray earnestly before each fight that I can win, could I win each fight? And the answer was yes, provided you punch harder than the other guy. Now, I don't think I have any right to ask for things that I can do and I can take care of, but I feel I have every right to ask for those things that I need for me and for others. And prayers have been answered. And it's just wonderful to see such a beautiful crowd here on your 36th anniversary. And I hope that this continues on so that your children and your grandchildren and those still to follow will have a meeting place to go if they need AA. And God bless you all.
One more thing. 37 years, I believe.
Well, as a starter, with friends like George, you don't need any enemies. I'm awful happy to be here tonight. George asked me to tell you about some of the early days in AA. It takes me back to Archie. By the way, George, when you're talking about Sarah Klein, and you made this tape, I couldn't help but whisper in my good friend Bill Joy's ear that the day you made these tapes happened to be my 83rd birthday. 14. That ought to get me off to a good start. If it doesn't, I'll tell you that age does things to you as you go along, because I hadn't been here alongside of my friend Bill Joy very long until he handed me a little piece of paper. And on that paper it says 1938, not 1939, and he was reminding me that that was the day I got sober and not in 1939, so. We had a wonderful time in those days. It meant so much to me. I can still remember Archie getting back from Akron, and the first meeting that I went to, Sarah Klein was there. The way I got into AA was after Archie got back to Detroit. My brother-in-law had been sent to Akron by his company, the Hudson Motor Car Company, to see if they could do something about his alcoholic problem. And their personnel man took my brother-in-law to Akron and dumped him down there with Dr. Bob, and he stayed there with Wally Gillum for about a week and came back to Detroit. And when he left Detroit, he was an alcoholic. He was in a terrible shape. His face was bloated. His eyes were blurry, and he just looked terrible. And I said, that's too bad that Mac had to go down to Akron to take the cure. That'll never happen to me. But he came back from down there, and I saw a tremendous change in him. His face had cleared up, his eyes had cleared up, and his walk was steady, and he looked like he'd gotten a hold of something. It wasn't very long after that until, as was my habit, I went out and tied one on, and after two or three days of putting her dying, I sobered up and I got to thinking about Mac, and I sent for him, and he came to me and he gave me this wonderful program. The only sorry thing about it all tonight is that what that man gave me, I was not able to give back to him, because somehow or other he was never able to latch on to it as I was, and what a tremendous jewel he'd given me, and I was so unable to give it back to him and help him in all those years. But Archie was trying to get a group started, and this upper room that Sarah, this newspaper article tells about Sarah Klein nursing an alcoholic back to life. It was in that upper room that she's talked about in this magazine article that I met with Archie and my brother-in-law and two or three other people, and that's all there were in AA at that time. And we met in Archie's room for a short while, and Sarah Klein was acquainted with some people by the name of Benson. And Mrs. Benson was wanting to do something for the alcoholic problem, and Sarah told her that what she was doing, and Mrs. Benson invited us to come over to her basement and have our meetings in Benson's basement. And that's where AA really got started, in the Benson basement. And while we were down in that Benson basement, lots of things happened. They talk about the people that started the first group in the Church of the Messiah. Mickey Grill's name was mentioned. Mickey Grill was one of these fellows that was just a whirlwind when it come to going out and bringing new men into AA. The number of people are too numerous to mention that Mickey brought in. And Mickey got a little careless and went out and took a drink, and he took another drink, and before long he got to a place where he wasn't able to handle it anymore, and he was so despondent that he took his own life. But that same Mickey, before he died, did one of the greatest things that lasted over all these years, 36 years or more. We were in this Benson's basement. There wasn't over a dozen of us at that time. And we were having our meeting, and an old gentleman walked in, and he sat in the corner until the meeting was over with, and he said, "I've been listening to you fellas," and he said, "I've heard about you." And he said, I've got a question to ask you." And somebody said, "What is it?" And he said, "Well, somewhere in the city of Detroit, I've got a boy that I haven't heard for years. And I'm just wondering if any of you in your travels have run into him." And Mickey Grills said to this man, what is his habits, what does he look like, and so on and so forth. The old gentleman explained to him as much as he could, and Mickey said, "Yes, I know where your son is. He's playing the piano down in Skid Row." And Mickey went out and got his son, and he brought that son back into AA. And that son, today, is still living and a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We had another fella that come into our meetings down in Benson's basement. And he come in and he saw all of us sober and everything, and he listened to the meeting. And he said, "Do you mean to tell me that all you fellas do to stay sober is just come here at these meetings and talk and discuss these things?" And we said, "Yeah, that's all we do. We exchange ideas and tell each other about our experiences." You see, that was about all we had to do in those days, because in the early days of AA, when we first got started, the big book hadn't been published yet. We had the 12 steps passed on to us by word of mouth. But we got them, we paid attention to them, and we learned them as best we could, and we used them. We said, "Yes, that's all we do." He said, "I think that's wonderful." He said, "I'm going to join." He said, "But I think what we ought to have is a lot more elegant club room than we've got here. We ought to have a club room in one of the bigger hotels down here and have some upholstered furniture and so on and so forth and make a club of it." And he said, "I think we ought to get a little exclusive. He said, "I don't think we ought to bring in all these bums from Skid Row." And that sort of thing. And it wasn't very long until I got a call. This friend of mine that made that statement was, you all know about DeKnight's, I know. He was over in DeKnight's Sanitary. Because he wanted to change everything so much, and he didn't want to follow these 12 steps and everything, and he never made it. It wasn't very long until we went to his funeral. And oh, I could go on and tell you stories about the fellas that didn't make it, but I'd a little rather tell you about the fellas that did. We stayed in Benson's basement until we outgrew it, and then we went to Doty Hall, and the cockroaches run us out of there. But our good friends down at 4242 Cass invited us to have our meetings there, and we held them there for many years until the different groups sprouted out and went one in one direction and one in another, and that's why we have all these groups that we're talking about. While we're talking about AA and what I learned down in Benson's basement, I think I would be amiss of my duty if I didn't tell you the foundation by which I am standing up here tonight sober. It was a result of what I learned in Benson's basement and the 12 steps. One of the greatest things I learned in the early days was a statement that was made by Dr. Bob, who incidentally, this month was 25 years since Dr. Bob passed away. And Dr. Bob said in Cleveland at one of the conventions we had down there, "I've heard that this AA business has gone into big business and that we're losing sight of a lot of the simple truths." And he said, "About all I've got to say, and the greatest thought I want to leave with you tonight is, hang on to those 12 steps, read them, live by them, and you won't have any trouble. And Dr. Bob was right, because that's the only policy that I've followed since I got into AA. And of course, there's variations to that, and there's things that you have to learn about it, but the one thing you have to learn about is the spiritual end of this program. That's the powerhouse of it all. And my sponsor, Mac, that did so much for me, told me when he come to call on me and gave me this program, he said, you know, if you're going to stay sober, you've taken your last drink. You can't drink anymore. And I said, don't they ever get well? Can't they sometime go back and take a drink? And he said, no, you've had your last drink. I said, that seems like an awful long while. And he said, yes, it is a long while, but we have an easy way to do it. He said, we get up in the morning and we have a quiet time. That's the day, that's the part of the day that we set aside to ask God for guidance. We have an upper room and we read it. And he brought along with him an upper room. And he said, I know there's a Bible in the house someplace. And he said, we use that. And he said, this upper room gives you a reference to the Bible, and we read that, and then we ask God to just keep us sober for 24 hours. And that night after we've had sobriety for that 24 hours, we get up the next morning and have the same quiet time, and we go on from one day to another, and he said, the days will go into months, and the months into years, and he said, there's people sober quite a number of years on just that premise. And sometime later, this 24-hour-a-day booklet was introduced, and I got a hold of one, and I've used it every day. And I'm telling you this because this is our routine at home. We wouldn't think of getting up in the morning and having our breakfast without, as we set the table, put the upper room, the Holy Bible, and this little 24-hour-a-day booklet. And we have that, and we have our morning prayer. And incidentally, this morning, when I was reading my 24-hour-a-day booklet, I opened up the fly leaf, and on it was to your friends from the Eileen group. And that was 17 years ago, when I'm still using that same 24-hour-a-day booklet. And I say this to you, that there's people that have taken exceptions to the spiritual aspect of this program, and they don't want any of this God stuff. And I just want to tell you tonight that if you don't use the God stuff, you're not going to make it. I know what I'm talking about, because I have used it in every department of my life, and I have never yet called upon the power greater than myself to give me help that I didn't get it. And the times have been so much. And they talk about the 23rd Psalm, and that part of it that says, my cup runneth over, it must have been written for me. Because this program has furnished me with the greatest amount of happiness and peace and contentment and prosperity that most men couldn't have in 10 lifetimes. And I've seen a lot of fellows that have tried to make the program and lost their life in the attempt. We had a fellow that used to be in the group out of Plymouth and Eileen, and his daughter got married, and he went to the wedding, and they served wine, and they thought just a little drink of wine wouldn't hurt him, but he took a drink of wine, and that drink of wine left him in such a shape that to get peace of mind, he had to commit suicide. And all the history books are full of that sort of thing, that people that haven't been able to latch on to this most simple program that has been our privilege to get a hold of. I'm thinking back tonight of some of the early days when Archie and I used to go to these meetings. Incidentally, Archie had quite time getting me down to the first meeting, but after he got me down there, there was a good many years that I didn't miss a meeting. And we had many discussions about this and that and the other thing. And if it hadn't been for Archie and those meetings, I doubt very much whether I'd be here tonight. The only difference between me and the fellow that's had some trouble with the program is that I toyed with the idea that maybe I could go back and take a drink after I was sober a while. But by the grace of God, I didn't try it, and he tried it. And the only thing I can say to the fellow that has had some trouble, come on back in. The only reason we didn't stumble is that we didn't try it. And they didn't allow me very much time, but I've got a few things that I want to say in addition to what I've already said. I want to pay tribute to all of those people whose name hasn't been mentioned tonight. And I'm mindful of the piece of the Psalm of Life that said, lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime. In departing, leave behind us footprints in the sands of time. Following that, let your light so shine that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. Now, these fellows that have worked so hard for AA, and I know lots of them, but I would like to call on one man to stand up tonight, a good friend of mine, a tireless worker in AA, as a symbol to all of those people that haven't been mentioned tonight. Eddie Vogts, will you stand up? Eddie's had so many experiences with people in his 12-step work that it would fill a book. In fact, I've said to him, Eddie, you ought to get together and get somebody to help you write the book on some of the miracles that has been performed as a result of the 12-step work that you've done. I don't know. I guess I've rambled on long enough. I do hope that we can have some more anniversaries. I hope I've thrown some light on this program and what makes it work. And as we go our several ways in the coming weeks and months, let us all be mindful of the duty we owe to God and man, and let us do be careful how we live. We may be the only Bible some people ever read. Thank you.
Spark plug in that group, and I'd like to have you stand up, Bob. You know, the Maccabees has been mentioned several times, and rightly so. That was our big Saturday night meeting in the early days when there wasn't another Saturday night meeting in Michigan or Ontario. And there was about 400 people got together there every Saturday night. It drew from Pontiac, it drew from Ann Arbor, it drew from Toledo and Monroe, and from Windsor and the other places in Canada. And they told me that AA was, or that alcoholism was a disease. And like our friend Ava Bruce, I saw so many alcoholics there to start with that I thought it was an epidemic. Well, seriously, there have been a lot of people here that deserve mention. And I'm going to ask those people who have 30 years or more to stand up. Those who have 25 years or more, please stand up. Josephine Slack just had her knee operated on. She can't stand up. But she stands out. Those who have 20 years or more. Wow. Those who have 15 years or more. Tell me before we bring the meeting to a close. It's very easy for me to goof. Well, in that case, let's close this beautiful